Welcome to Manager Tools. The Myth of the Feedback Myth, part 3 of 3. Here we go. This cast answers these questions. How do I counteract pushback on feedback? What should I do when performance reviews and feedback are discussed? Why is feedback under attack? Well, if you want answers to these important questions and more, keep listening.
Folks, we're announcing to everybody in the community today that we're moving our M conference, originally scheduled for August of this year, 2020, to March 10th and 11th next year in Chicago. We've already communicated with everybody who was scheduled to attend and all of the speakers. All the speakers are on board with moving. We simply couldn't pull it off in good conscience relative to the travel restrictions into Chicago and the changing rules and potential restrictions around COVID-19 in our selected location in Chicago this August, next month. So we apologize for the inconvenience, but we hope that'll give more of you time to be free and clear of the kind of restrictions we're under and consider an opportunity to come. I assure you, it'll be the best management conference you ever attend.
All right, Mark. So part 3 of the feedback myth. This has been...
Yeah, you cut me off. I was getting going.
I know you're still going. Hey, folks. So like I said, it's part 3. If you haven't listened to the first two, you may want to do so before going on. Matter of fact, unfortunately, because kind of the timing of the content, we kind of stopped in the middle of one of our major points, which is not something we very frequently do. We try not to do that, but otherwise it would have just gone too long. And like Mark said, he was on a roll and I stopped him, mean man that I am. So let's pick up where we left off. So you're talking about Marcus Buckingham's article, right?
Yeah. The Feedback Fallacy, Harvard Business Review.
We're starting to get into the straw man that he put out. He put a straw man out there and then refuted it. And we had a little bit of a problem with that.
Yeah, I generally have a problem with straw men. I find them to be almost always poorly constructed and designed to essentially make the complainant's case. And if you want to beat a straw man argument, just take apart the principles or the posits they put in. Well, there have to be three things and so on. And then you discover the three things have nothing to do with the core disagreement you have. So in this article, their straw man, which supports the assertion that they have that feedback is an unalloyed good, which they disagree with, says there are three theories that we in the business world commonly accept as truth. That's how it starts. And the straw man ends up being false because we know lots of people who absolutely do not think these things at all. And it's a bit like, you know, it's interesting. As I was reading it, I thought it was an interesting effort at excluding people. With all the talk in the world today about inclusivity, it was basically saying, hey, all the smart people in business, all the good people, all the normal people, here's what we think. If you don't think this stuff, well, then you're not really in the business world. And I guess I just have always had a problem with that kind of narrow construction regarding diversity. So, a diversity of thought in this case. Okay. There are three theories or beliefs that they have. The first one is that other people are more aware than you are of your own weaknesses and the best way to help you. Therefore, is for them to show you what you cannot see for yourself. Okay, again, this is a belief that most of the people in the business world subscribe to. Other people are more aware than you are of your own weaknesses, and therefore the best way to help you is for them to show you what you cannot see for yourself. I got to tell you, I don't know anyone who thinks this. And look, I'm sure it applies to some arrogant bosses, and there are plenty of them out there. I also think it's misleading. But look, it goes to the negativity thing again. It suggests that weaknesses are what feedback is about. And while that may be true for some, it's a dumb way to think about professional performance. Look, again, I've already gone on and on about it. A manager who talks to his directs about their weaknesses without years of experience and negative feedback and discussions about patterns of behavior isn't doing himself or the direct any favors.
Yeah.
Yeah. Weaknesses. Oh, yeah, weaknesses. Here's your weakness. Yeah, that's good. You know what? That's a character attack. It's dumb. Weaknesses. We don't attack people. That's not the way you do it. Your organization is set up to perform for society. Society provides your organization feedback, communication, actually, about its behaviors through, for most large organizations, through the profit motive. If you put out a product and it doesn't sell, that's a form of feedback. If you put out a product that does sell, that's a form of feedback. Your organization itself is bathed in feedback from vendors, from customers, from the markets, all the time. And some of it can be quite good. The idea that internally, feedback is not good, or that we should talk about individual people's weaknesses, ludicrous.
So suffice it to say that you're not buying into the first point of a straw. No. Okay.
Okay, so yeah. I'm sorry, that wasn't clear. I tend to be a fairly clear communicator, although sometimes wordy. Okay. The second belief they posit is that the process of learning is like filling up an empty vessel. You lack certain abilities you need to acquire, so we should teach them to you. Well, I've never thought feedback was about teaching. It's not. It's about making people aware of the effects of their behaviors, good and bad. Good and bad. And no one would argue that managers don't have a different perspective than directs and might have something to offer relative to experience. Of course, if Mike's my boss, he has a different experience. Why wouldn't he want to make me aware of the effects of my behavior, particularly if the effects of my behavior cannot be obvious to me? He was in a meeting where somebody said, hey, Horstman's presentation was really good, or I like Horstman's idea. Okay. By the way, note the negativity of their construction. They're talking about what you lack. You lack certain abilities. And empty, like filling up an empty vessel. I got to tell you, it sets up managers as arrogant and negative. I just don't like it. It's very looking down. And the third belief, by the way, is that great performance is universal, analyzable, and describable, and it can be transferred from one person to another. Again, I don't think anyone I know thinks that in any way, shape, or form. I mean, I'm sitting there reading going, what on earth is this? It's almost bizarrely detached from what I think of when I think of management. Now, by the way, at this point in the article, I was beginning to get the feeling that this is very erudite, it is, and very analytical, academic challenge to the idea of management from the standpoint of, interestingly enough, we know better, and what you're doing is wrong, and you don't know enough about learning theory and education and so on. It just sounded like the verbiage was set up to be, yeah, you don't understand human beings. Of course, our feeling about understanding human beings is sit down and talk to them and have an open mind and listen well, and pretty soon you'll get to know human beings. They then go on to say, by the way, hence you can, with feedback about what excellence looks like, understand where you fall short. Okay? Because great performance is universal, analyzable, describable, if you give people feedback about what excellence looks like, understand where you fall short. Who said feedback was about the gap between someone and excellence? Hey, sometimes there is no gap. And why wouldn't you want to give them feedback then? When and where did excellence come into this equation? Feedback is simply information about one's behavior. That's it. It's not about describing your people's miserable lack of excellence and then implying as well that we all have some universal, analyzable, describable way of comparing them. Anyway, okay. Now look, guys, I tend to be a pretty passionate describer of all things management, and don't get me wrong, I do think highly of Mr. Buckingham and his co-author, but I think they may have made the mistake of creating a straw man that essentially paints the other side's argument with stuff you don't like, whether it's true or not, so they can take apart the straw man, which, by the way, they then do. Now, look, I also would make the case that the authors are attacking correctly all the terrible delivering of performance communications from all of the terrible managers in the world and calling it feedback. All of the ad hominem attacks that managers make, you know, you're not any good. You're not inspired enough. Why aren't you more motivated? Those are all ad hominem attacks, and they're wrong and they don't work and they're stupid and you shouldn't be a manager if you do stuff like that. Okay. All of the conversations about issues of some concern, please step into my office or what, 8:10 o'clock in the morning, go by. Hey, why don't you come by and see me at the end of the day? I need to talk to you about an issue. Yeah, talk about a way to ruin someone's productivity. And then going on, vague threats of dire consequences and how we would like to achieve excellence in this company, but you're just not excellent enough for us. All that stuff, I think they're saying all that is feedback. But the problem, guys, is most of it isn't feedback. It's threats and fear-mongering and role power. And if we're going to have a really academic discussion about management, we can't just throw all the things we don't like and call it one thing, when in fact there are more precise descriptions of all of those other things. Now, look, I'm not saying that we don't agree that the average manager's approach to performance communications isn't good. We know the average manager is poor at communicating about performance. But calling all of it feedback isn't accurate. Maybe it's marketing. Okay, so now they've created the straw man.
We wouldn't know anything about that, so we'll just leave that aside.
Yeah, we know nothing about marketing. All we know is really, really good content. And folks, if you haven't figured it out, if I haven't said it enough on the podcast, in the last 15 plus years, you're our marketing department. The reason we don't spend a lot of money on marketing and advertising, the reason why we don't throw ads in the Wall Street Journal or in other podcasts or whatever, is because we think if our content is really good, you'll go tell people about it. Okay. Now they're going to debunk the straw man. They say about the first belief, others are more aware of our own weaknesses. They say that's false because humans are unreliable raters of other humans. Now look, I thought what they'd say is, no, all of us pretty well know what our strengths and weaknesses are. And another person wouldn't know. Not that we should be talking about weaknesses anyway, guys. Anyway, humans are unreliable raters of other humans. This is because we all have our own biases, and we carry biases through in every evaluation of others. Therefore, they say, feedback is more distortion than truth. They go on to say that that's why receiving feedback is so hard. Because there's so much distortion. Then they suggest that there are all kinds of errors we all make when it comes to evaluating others. And I think that's probably true, but it's misleading. They say we're not unimpeachable judges of others' failings. I don't think anybody in the world thinks they're an unimpeachable judge of someone else, other than megalomaniacs. Nor does anyone I know of think that unimpeachability ought to be the standard for providing guidance and feedback to someone who's part of an organization where everyone has to be willing to subsume some part of themselves to make the organization effective. I don't get it. Now, let's throw in here our model of feedback. Somebody's late to a meeting. We ask them, can I give you some feedback? We do so to let the direct know we want to talk to them about their performance, their future performance, and also to give them the option to defer to a later time. If the direct says yes, we say, when you're late, it messes up the agenda. Can you do that better next time? How is this distortion? We're not rating this person against some abstract concept like excellence.
You know, I think time is a generally accepted thing, right? Yeah. We all know what we talk about when meeting starts at 10 o'clock. We know what it is to be late.
Yeah. We are simply asking them to do better against a known and reasonable standard of behavior that organizations rely on all the time to serve customers. Now, okay, maybe the authors are only thinking about really bad examples of delivering feedback where it's late, it's 2 weeks later than it should have been, it's unspecific, it's not behavioral, maybe it's personal, it's an ad hominem attack. Look, that's not necessarily a bad thing to talk about how managers can get better in feedback. But it's clumsy and awkward to call those kinds of things feedback. And the reason that's interesting is because they consider the manager tools, these authors cited the manager tools feedback model. It was the first model they cited in their examples. They cited that as part of the problem. By the way, I was already upset with the article when I saw our first bit of the feedback model in their article. I was livid. Okay. Second belief, learning is like filling up an empty vessel, and feedback provides useful information. They say that learning is about reinforcing what is good and known, and not about adding something new. In fact, they say, education theory, academic theory teaches us pointing out errors smothers learning. So by this definition, guys, teachers should not mark test answers that are incorrect. Maybe, I suppose, they should mark the correct answers and just not mark at all the wrong ones. But what's problem for me here is that the discussion has shifted to learning theory, and the examples they use are about students. But learning theory is notably different than organizational theory and performance theory and theories of excellence, for that matter. Our authors also say, feedback must meet us in our moments of flow. Now I think, before a manager can be certified to be a manager of other people, you have to be taught how to recognize moments of flow. That would be interesting. Now, let me just mention something. A counterexample to this learning theory, this academic approach. Let's look at how NFL players learn. The day after every game an NFL player plays, he sits down with his position coach and goes over, in high definition and slow motion, every play he played the previous day. The camera is zoomed in on only them, and in the corner of the screen is a view of everyone on the play, so they have context for what they were doing and everyone else was in the play. And then for 60 to 90 minutes, each player reviews every single move on every single play they made in slow motion and is both credited and critiqued on everything they did. These are the best people in their jobs in the world with unlimited resources, functionally unlimited, getting feedback, both positive and negative, and doing it for every single game action they took. That's not moments of flow. It's 24 hours later. In fact, I think maybe we'll talk about this more. They actually recommend you interrupt people when they're doing something good and say, yes, that's it, do that. I don't know about you, but that's like waking somebody up. It's like taking somebody out of their moment of flow. Okay, anyway, the third belief, the theory of excellence. They say excellence is impossible to define, but easy for each of us to achieve. That's because excellence is completely idiosyncratic, totally up to the person who's trying to achieve it. Okay? And it can't be learned by studying failure. We suggest here that excellence is a long road with many twists and turns and only available to those who sacrifice, not those who wish to always be thriving. Usually, in fact, our experience is excellence is the product of thousands of hours of hard work, stress, disappointment, small wins, and small failures, and sometimes big failures.
We recently got an email saying, guys, I just got a license and got show notes. You're underselling them. They're full on, well, how do I describe them? Well, that's a good question. And one we've been struggling with the whole time we've had licenses. We call them show notes, but they're actually a written version of the entire content of a cast. You can read the show notes in 5 minutes because we can read really fast and get everything you hear in the cast. Go to manager-tools.com, choose products in the menu, personal license in the dropdown, and on the right, click download a sample. When you see what show notes really means, we know you'll want a license too.
Okay, let's talk about their recommendations. I found them poor. The first remedy they say is to look for outcome. What they mean is when something goes well, you should interrupt them at that moment. At that moment, I knew we were going to get to this. It actually says in the article, stop the flow of work for a moment and say that, yes, that.
Because it's so easy to get back into flow.
I'm sorry. How did we go from academic, almost abstrusity to yes, that? Wouldn't it be nice to be around when every direct of yours took every action that was ever good so you could stop them in the middle of it? Yeah, how many questions do I get about working from home lately?
Well, the other thing, problem with that I have is saying that, yes, that, assumes that somehow the direct is going to know exactly what you're talking about. And that is often
agreed,
not the case, right? Yeah. Which is like, well, I just did, in the last 30 seconds, I did five things. What are you giving me feedback about?
By the way, they say this twice. They say it later in the article. If you see somebody doing something that really works, stop her and dissect it.
Oh, and to say, oh, yeah.
I'm sorry. I just, you know, okay. Now let's get to the fun part. In a table where the author's contracts bad and good ways to help colleagues excel, the very first example of language they cite is, can I give you some feedback? For the record, they say we should be telling you that you should start with, here's my reaction. By the way, guys, just so you know, we tested this on thousands. I think probably when it comes to the feedback model, tens of thousands of managers. We tested it. People don't like managers starting with, here's my reaction, or here's what I think. That causes them to blame you for your response rather than them taking a moment to understand the connection between what they did, the action they took, and the outcome that was achieved. By the way, they don't go on. After they say, you don't say, can I give you some feedback, say, here's my reaction. They don't say what you should say, anything else. I guess what they say is, here's my reaction. Yes, that. Look, no offense, but if you're going to cite somebody else's work, ours, you ought to know what you're talking about. How does the purpose of the first step of our model, allowing directs to demur, send a message, and we're going to send a message about what's coming, performance communication, how does that get solved by focusing first on the manager's reaction? And the answer is, it doesn't. And you know what else? And this is the thing that really put the stake in the heart of this article for me. There was not a word in this article about trust, about building trust with your directs. It's as if that feedback can happen between any person and any other person if this other person, if the manager understands academia and learning theory and excellence and all these bad ideas that everybody else does. Nothing in there about relationships. Nothing about how the more your directs trust you, the more likely they are to take a positive or a negative from you eagerly. I've told the story before of the call center manager, Hi Matt Beckwith, who was so good with his people that he leaned over one day to the rep, the call center rep who was sitting right next to him, who had had a bit of a challenging call, leaned over between cubicles and says, hey, can I give you some feedback? He said it very quietly. And the direct said, sure, boss. And he said, hey, when you said that word there, this is after a call. When you said that word there, it seemed like that's when your tone changed and the call kind of went south. Can you think about using a different word next time? And the guy says, hey, thanks. That's right. Well, during this time, everybody who was on the team who happened to be sitting in a row, as the way call centers are often set up, many of them leaned back in their chairs and it got deathly quiet. And of course, the feedback was overheard, which is not a cardinal sin, but we try to avoid it. And two or three of them looked at the manager and says, can I have some feedback? Now, that's our model. Doesn't have anything to do with learning theory, although our stuff certainly is informed by learning theory or excellence or academia or anything else. And this particular manager cared about his people and had spent time with them, getting to know them, and had shown them that he was an ethical, fair, professional person who cared about them and what they wanted and also cared about what the organization wanted. And he was betwixt and between, and he knew that. And he knew that he served the organization first. And the way to serve the organization first is to build close, trusting relationships with his directs. And he had done it so well that even when the feedback he was giving to someone, and by the way, it was about a behavior that they took and the outcome that they achieved, which in this case was negative, when he did that, other people wanted him to do it with them. That's human beings, not theories of excellence. That's how you do it. Okay. Well, I think I hope I've made my point.
So bottom line, the feedback model he's talking about, it's not feedback, right? He's not talking about feedback. That's not, at least in our definition, right? Now that's the problem with the word feedback. You can define it any way you want, yeah. I guess, right? But certainly not the way we define it.
Yeah, it's just sad. You know, I often say, in fact, in a recent things, I think I used the Moneyball speech in the basement parking lot to say that large organizations have a great misunderstanding of what management is, and it causes them to make bad decisions. So I often attack the state of management today, and many times it's the thought leaders and the people who have popular positions and write books and are on podcasts and on TV. Not that management gets a lot of play on TV other than The Office. And I address people who have these theories that seem to me disconnected from reality, and this is one of them. Because management is not a theory. It's people working together and trying to be better. And yes, some managers are not smart about their job. And I would argue some of them are not smart because they're willfully not smart. But a much larger percentage of us are not smart because nobody ever taught us what to do. And the reason why is nobody's ever figured it out, at least the way we have. When there's no underpinnings of functionality, of effectiveness, and so on, all these theories get their fair 5 minutes, I should say 15 minutes of fame, but I'm secretly hoping it's only 5 minutes. Look, guys, let me summarize. If you're a manager, you're obligated to talk about performance with your direct. Thriving and excelling and words like collaborate sound great, but mean almost nothing tangible to most professionals. If you think your job is to help your people thrive, to communicate with them with purpose and meaning, I got to tell you, I could come up with 50 people who would say, let's define thrive and excel and communicate with purpose and meaning. And we could define it so many different ways. It no longer is a useful construct. If your directs feel like they're struggling, but they are doing their best and achieving organizational goals, according to the organization, that's thriving and excelling. In fact, I would argue that many of the people who the organization would think are thriving and excelling actually are saying, I'm struggling, because for them, the struggle is part of what makes them good. And it's frustrating at times. And the organization gets in its own way sometimes. But that doesn't mean when we all achieve organizational goals, we're not thriving and excelling. And I would suggest the counterpart too. If somebody says to you, I'm thriving and excelling, but they're not achieving the goals, sooner or later, they and the organization need to part ways. I know that sounds terrible, but this isn't an experiment. It's real life. It's mankind, humankind serving other humans. You have to earn their trust. And look, it takes a trusted manager or a colleague, not just anybody, not an academician, not an analytical posit on their situation. It takes a trusted manager or colleague to tell somebody when they're doing well and when they're off track. Whether they are or not, you start with trust. And then you focus on behavior.
Awesome, my friend.
I won't do another one of those for a while. I enjoyed this one, but I feel like it's just far enough afield from real manager behavior. But as I said in the beginning, I wanted to arm everybody with the next time somebody starts talking about feedback and performance reviews and thriving and excelling and collaborating and so on, Yeah. It's also good if we meet deadlines and hire effectively and clear with goals and build trust, the connective tissue of the organization. Those things are important too.
Yeah, it's important. It's also important to be able to defend your behaviors and your philosophy as a manager, right? So if you're doing feedback and getting great results and your boss or somebody else comes at you with a popular author's opinion about quote-unquote feedback, it's good to be prepared for that.
Yes, great point.
All right, my friend. I enjoyed that.
Thanks, partner.
We'll see you later. Thanks, everyone. We'll see you next week. In the meantime, have a great one. So long.